Chapter 13. An alarming threat. The main machines in the engine room were the two motors, one designed to send the projectile through the atmosphere, the other intended to propel it through the space filled with what is called ether. It was to these two massive machines that the eyes of all were now directed. The smaller one, the atmospheric motor, did not appear to have been damaged, but several wheels and pipes of the other were broken and twisted. "Is it ruined?" asked Professor Henderson. Mr. Rauman was anxiously looking at the apparatus to see what damage had been done by the bomb. "Can't we go to Mars?" inquired Jack. "I think so," was the reassuring reply of the scientist. "It is not damaged, so much as I feared. The wheels and pipes are easily replaced, and as long as the generator and the distributing plates are not disturbed, I can easily repair the rest. But it was a fortunate chance that the bomb did not explode near the projectile. Otherwise we would have had to give up our journey." "And we would have had to, if you had been killed," remarked the professor. "I thought the secret of the power was going to die with you." "It will," replied Mr. Rauman, "but not just yet. I shall never disclose the source of the power until I reach Mars, get what I am after, and come back. Then I may bequeath it to you, Professor Henderson, in return for the kindness of yourself and your young assistants. I will appreciate that. But you had better go to the house now and let me doctor you up." "No, I feel well. I want to get right to work repairing the damage. It will delay us several days, but we cannot avoid it. I wish I could catch the men responsible for this outrage." "Have you any idea who they were?" "No, but I suspect they were an enemy of mine. A man who used to work for me, but whom I discharged because of dishonesty. His name was Zeb Forker. One of the men who threw the bomb was same one who was at the window one night," said Mark. "Do you suppose he could be Forker, Mr. Rauman?" "No, I do not believe so. But we will not discuss that now. Fancy the men will not bother us again." "I'll tell Andy to keep a better watch," said Mr. Henderson. "And we'll help him," added Mark. "There is little for us to do on the projectile now, and we can do guard duty, Jack and I together." It took Mr. Rauman several days to repair the damage done to the ethereum motor by the bomb. During that time Andy and the boys were constantly on guard about the shop, but the crazy machinist and his companion did not return. Washington White agreed to stand guard part of one night, and, as the others were tired, they agreed to it. But a fox or some animal got in among the colored man's chickens, and at the first sound of alarm from his favorite fowls, Washington deserted his post and rushed for the coop. Jack, who was awakened by the noise, looked out of the window. "It is someone trying to get in, Wash?" he asked. "That's what, Massa Jack." Jack awakened Mark, and the two hurried down with their guns. They found the colored ma making a circuit of his coop. "I thought you said someone was trying to get in," observed Jack. "So they was, Massa Jack. I done heard the most tremendousness conglomeration of disturbances in the direction of my domesticorian ornithological specimens, and I runned over to see what it were." "You mean that something was after your chickens?" asked Mark. "That's the impression I done endeavored to prognosticate to yo, but seems like I ain't understood," replied Washington with an injured air. "Oh, I understand you, all right," said Jack, "but I thought you meant someone was jetting in the machine shop." "No, dear, ain't been no one dear, but I was scared that somebody was after my chickens, but I guess it were only a rat. I'll go back and stay on guard now." "No, you'd better go to bed," decided Jack. "Mark and I will finish out the night." "All right," agreed Washington, who, to tell the truth, was getting sleepy. There were no further disturbances, and Mark and Jack found their tour of duty rather lonesome. "Well, I suppose we'll start in a day or so," marked Jack, as they paced about the big shed which housed the great projectile. "Yes. The motor seems to be in good working order again. Say, I've just thought of something."
"What?"
Suppose something should happen to Mr. Rauman, or to the motor, while we were halfway to Mars. I mean, suppose he should die, why, we wouldn't know how to stop the motor, and we might keep on going forever. Oh, I guess he'll tell the professor enough about it, so that in case anything happened we could start it or stop it. It's only the secret of the power that he wants to keep. I wonder what he wants to go to Mars for, anyhow. Well, you know what he said? That he wants to get possession of some wonderful substance. I guess it is the same stuff that makes the planet seem red to us. What's he going to do with it? I don't know. Wonder what it is? I don't know that either. Maybe it's some sort of a mineral, like radium. Radium would be valuable if he could get that. Maybe that's what he's going after. No, I think not. If it was, he wouldn't be particular about not telling us. We'll just have to wait and see. The following 2 days were busy ones, as many little adjustments had to be made to the machine. But at last Mr. Rauman announced that all was completed. We will start day after tomorrow, he said. All the stores are in the projectile, I have everything arranged, and we will begin our trip Mars. Are we going to go up like a balloon, through the roof of the shed? Asked Jack. No, we'll start out through the great doors, said the German. My plan is to elevate the nose or bow of the projectile, point it toward the sky at a slight angle by means of propping it up on blocks. Then we will get in, seal all the openings, and I will turn on the power, and off we go. We can shoot right through the big doors at the end of the shed, and no one will know anything about it, for we will leave the Earth so fast that before anyone is aware of our plans we will be out of sight. That is a good idea, commented Mr. Henderson. Have you boys put everything in the projectile that you'll need? I guess so, replied Jack, though it's hard to tell what you really will need on another planet. All I want is my gun and some ammunition, declared Andy Suds. I can get along with that. How about you, Washington? Asked Jack. Well, I swallowed Lake T take my fowls along. I don't see how you can do that very well, Wash, objected Mr. Henderson. We would have to carry food for them, and our space is very limited at best. I'm afraid you'll have to get rid of your chickens. Couldn't I take my Shanghai rooster? Begged the colored man. He's a fine bird, and maybe them folks on Mars never see the real rooster. I swat does hate to leave him behind. Oh, I guess you could take him, agreed Mr. Rauman. I'll give him some of my rations, promised Washington. He eats just like white folks, that Shanghai do. Golly. Take him. I'll go out and make a cage. What will you I do with the rest of your fowls, Wash? Asked Mark. Oh, a feller named Jim Johnson'll keep him for me till we gets back. Jim's a cousin of mine. The next day was spent in jacking up the prow of the projectile, so that it pointed in a slanting direction toward the sky. Am you aiming it right at Mars? Asked the colored man, pausing in the work of making cage for his rooster. No, that isn't necessary, said Mr. Rauman. Once it starts upward, I can steer it in any direction I choose. I can send it directly toward Mars. It's just like a boat, observed Washington. That's it. Well, tomorrow we start, spoke Jack that night, as they were gathered in the dining room of the professor's house after supper, discussing the great trip. And to think that in 10 days we'll be on 35 millions of miles away from the Earth, added Mark. It's a mighty long way, said Andy. Maybe we'll never get back. Oh, I guess we will, declared Jack. We got back all right from... His words were interrupted by a breaking of glass. One of the windows crashed in, and something came through it into the room. It fell up on the floor. A square, black object. That's one of them bombs, cried Washington. Everybody, it'll go off. There was a scramble to get out of the room, Washington falling down on the threshold. Jack, who was in a corner, behind some chairs, found his way blocked. This gave him a chance to take a little longer look at the object that had been thrown through the window. That's not a bomb, he cried. Paper. The professor, Mark, and Mr. Rauman stopped their hurried egress. They came back and looked at the object. As Jack had said, it was something tied up in black paper with pink string. It doesn't look like a bomb, observed Mark. More like a brick, said Jack, and started toward it. Maybe it's an infernal machine, suggested Mark. Jack hesitated a moment, listened to detect any possible ticking of some hidden clock mechanism, and then, as no sound came from the object, he picked it up. Rapidly tearing off the paper, he disclosed a harmless red brick. Someone wanted to scare us, remarked Andy. There's a paper wrapped around the brick. A white paper, said Professor Henderson. So there is, spoke Jack as he removed it. There's writing on it, too. He held it up to the light. It's a message, he went on, and not a very pleasant one, either. Who's it from? Asked Mr. Rauman. It's signed the Crazy Machinist, Jack, and this is what it says. Beware, I am still after you. I will yet blow you sky high. He threw that in through the window, cried Mark. Outside here. Let's see if we can't catch him. That's right, added Jack. Andy. The boys, followed by the hunter and the man, hurried from the house. Through space to Mars by Rockwood,